Welcome to the Baird Group Corporate Restructuring Review for May 2011, brought to you by the editors of the Troubled Company Reporter and Troubled Company Prospector. This month's Corporate Restructuring Review will discuss five topics. First, last month's largest Chapter 11 filings. Second, large Chapter 11 filings TCR editors anticipate in the near term. Third, a quick review of the major pending disputes in Chapter 11 cases that we monitor day by day. Fourth, reminders about debtors whose emergence from Chapter 11 has been delayed. And fifth, information you're unlikely to find elsewhere about new publicly traded securities being issued by Chapter 11 debtors. Now, let's review the largest Chapter 11 cases in May 2011. Danilo Moniz reports that the number of Chapter 11 cases with assets in excess of $100 million dropped slightly in May as compared to the previous months. Six companies led by Jackson Hewitt Tax Service Incorporated filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection with assets of at least $100 million in May, raising the total mega cases to 32 for the first 5 months of 2011, an average of six per month. There were eight companies with assets of at least $100 million that filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in April and six each in March, February, and January. This represents a roughly 37% decline from the same period last year. For the first 5 months of 2010, a total of 51 mega cases were filed, including 10 mega cases in May of 2010. The average number of mega cases in the first 5 months of 2010 was about 10 per month. For fiscal year 2010, a total of 105 mega cases were filed. This is an average of about 9 cases per month. No billion-dollar company commenced Chapter 11 proceedings in May 2011. So far this year, two companies with assets of in excess of $1 billion filed for Chapter 11 protection. Borders Group and MSR Resort Golf Course, both of which filed in February. During the first 5 months of 2010, there were no Chapter 11 filings with assets in excess of $1 billion. The largest file for May, Jackson Hewlett, listed $315.9 million in assets and $378.4 million in total liabilities. Jackson Hewlett and its affiliates filed for Chapter 11 protection with the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware on May 24, 2011. Jackson Hewlett has a deal with secured lenders that will let the company exit court protection within 60 days. Jackson Hewlett provides computerized preparation of federal, state, and local individual income tax returns in the United States through a nationwide network of franchise company-owned offices operating under the brand name Jackson Hewlett Tax Service. Jackson Hewlett is the second largest paid tax return preparer in the United States, having prepared approximately 2.6 million tax returns for the 2011 tax season, which is between 3% and 4% of the total market for paid tax return preparation services. The Chapter 11 filing comes after U.S. regulators move to curb the loans that tax preparers arrange for customers expecting refunds. Refund anticipation loans are under scrutiny by regulators, including the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency. The biggest U.S. tax preparer, H&R Block Incorporated, won't offer tax refunds loans this year after the OCC, which regulates the national banks, blocked HSBC Holdings PLC from funding them. JP Morgan Chase & Company exited the refund loan business in April 2010. The second largest filing was by the Swiss Chalet Incorporated, listing total assets of $118.52 million and total liabilities of $132.74 million. The company filed for Chapter 11 protection on May 27, 2011, with the Bankruptcy Court for the District of Puerto Rico. Swiss Chalet owns the Best Western Hotel Pierre in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Charles Alfred Cupril, Esquire in San Juan, Puerto Rico, serves as counsel to the Swiss Chalet. for other companies that file for Chapter 11 with estimated assets between $100 million and $500 million are Berkline Benchcroft Holdings, LLC, Carib Media Incorporated, Alt Hotel, LLC, and Wolf Mountain Resort, LLC. Berkline Benchcroft Holdings, along with five subsidiaries, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy with the Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware. The company, with their Berkline and Benchcroft brands, held a number 5 market share and had a growing presence in home theater seating, including reclining sofas, love seats, and sectionals. In February, Berkline hired FTI Consulting Incorporated to help it restructure and find a buyer. When Berkline was able to sell itself, the company decided to liquidate and file for bankruptcy. Carib Media Incorporated and CII Acquisition Holding Incorporated filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection from the Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware on May 3, 2011. Carib Media owns publication rights for certain print and internet directories in the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico. Carib Media owns 60% of Axia Servicios de Información, S, and a Yellow Pages publisher in Puerto Rico, and the official publisher of all telephone directories for Puerto Rico Telephone Company Incorporated, the largest local exchange carrier in Puerto Rico, and 100% of the Carib Servicios de Información Dominicana, South America, a sole directory publisher of Dominican Republic with the exclusive right to publish under the brand of Cotel, the largest telecom operator in Dominican Republic. Carib Media are affiliates of Local Insight Media Holdings Incorporated. Alt Hotel LLC filed a Chapter 11 petition with the Bankruptcy Court for the Northern District of Illinois on May 5, 2011. Neil L. Wolf Esquire and Dean C. Gramlich Esquire at Neil Wolf and Associate LLC in Chicago serve as bankruptcy counsel to Alt Hotel. Alt Hotel is the owner of the Allerton Hotel in Chicago. Alt Hotel sought bankruptcy protection as it tries to fend off Diamond Rock Hospitality Company, which owns the $69 million first mortgage on the property, from foreclosing on the property. The hotel will remain open and employees will continue to be paid, said the owner, an affiliate of Petra Capital Management, LLC of New York. Wolf Mountain Resort, LLC, based in Los Angeles, California, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy with the Bankruptcy Court for the Central District of California on May 9, 2011. Mark S. Hurapan, Esquire, and Salamat Kupets serves as bankruptcy counsel. Wolf Mountain Resorts is the landowner behind Canyons Resort, one of the Utah's biggest vacation spots. Wolf Mountain Resorts owns thousands of acres of snow-capped terrain in Park City, Utah. On April 26, the Utah jury decided Wolf Mountain Resorts had violated agreements it made with the affiliate of the former resort operator, American Skiing Company, which had leased the land in 1997 and agreed to develop the area. The jury found that Wolf Mountain Resorts breached its contract when it stalled the construction of the resort's first golf course and surrounding residential development. Delays took place amid a heated real estate market. The jury awarded Wolf Mountain Resorts pay $54.4 million, prompting the bankruptcy filing. Mr. Munoz also reports that no prepackaged Chapter 11 cases were filed in May 2011. For the first 5 months of 2011, 8 of 32 mega cases, or 25%, had prepackaged Chapter 11 plans. For fiscal year 2010, a total of 35 prepackaged, prearranged cases were filed, about one in every three filings in 2010. Of the May mega cases, 3 went to Delaware, 1 each went to Puerto Rico, Central District of California, and Northern District of Illinois. For the first 4 months of 2011, 17 mega cases went to Delaware and 7 went to the Southern District of New York. Lehman Brothers Holding Corp. remains the biggest corporate bust in history. Lehman, which filed in 2008, reported $639 billion in total assets and $613 billion in total debts at the time of its filing. Now, let's turn to the topic of large Chapter 11 filings troubled company reporter editors anticipate in the near term. Carlo Fernandez compiled a list of four companies that may be close to filing for bankruptcy: Municipal Mortgage and Equity, LLC, Nebraska Book Company, American Apparel Incorporated, and Horizon Lines Incorporated. Municipal Mortgage and Equity, LLC, warned following its results in 2010 that it may have to file for bankruptcy to address its liquidity issues. Municipal Mortgage, which is engaged in investing in servicing tax-exempt mortgage revenue bonds, reported a net loss of $16.5 million on $21.9 million of total interest income for the 3 months ended March 31, 2011, compared to with a net loss of $21.4 million on $23.3 million of total interest income for the same period during the period year. The company balance sheet at March 31, 2011 showed $1.97 billion in total assets, $1.28 billion in total liabilities, and $683.3 million equity. LBO Wire has reported that Weston Presidio-backed Nebraska Book Company is considering its options as a cash shortage puts the company in danger of defaulting on its loan. Moody's, which downgraded Nebraska Book's parent NBC Acquisition corporate rating to CAA2 from CAA1 in April, said that it believes Nebraska Book will not be able to make sufficient dividend payments to NBC Acquisition that will be needed by NBC Acquisition to meet its September 2011 scheduled interest payment on its $77 million senior debentures due 2013. Dividend payments from Nebraska Book Company are the only source of debt repayment for the senior debentures. S&P, which has a CCC credit rating on Nebraska Book, said the firm needs it to refinance its debt or restructure because of near-term maturities. Bloomberg News said in March that Nebraska Book and its parent have hired legal financial advisors to help in restructuring debt and preparing for a Chapter 11 filing if necessary. If there is a distressed exchange or a Chapter 11 filing, Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated and Cebrius Capital Management LP could end up in control after purchasing debt at discount, people familiar with the plan said, according to the report. NBC reported a net loss of $12.51 million on $414.4 million of revenue for the 9 months ended December 31, 2010, compared with a net loss of $6.77 million on $412.13 million of revenue for the same period during the prior year. The company's balance sheet at December 31, 2010 showed $657.8 million in total assets, $624.5 million in total liabilities, and stockholder equity of $33.3 million. American Apparel Incorporated reported a net loss of $20.7 million on $116.1 million of net sales for the 3 months ended March 31, 2011, compared with a net loss of $42.8 million on $121.8 million of net sales for the same period during the prior year. If we're not able to timely, successfully, or efficiently implement the strategies that we are pursuing to improve our operating performance and financial position, obtain alternative sources of capital, or otherwise meet our liquidity needs, we may need to voluntarily seek protection under Chapter 11 of the U.S. Bankruptcy Code, American Apparel warned in its first quarter report. The company acknowledged that it may not have sufficient liquidity necessary to sustain operations for the next 12 months. In April, American Apparel announced it raised new capital, allowing it to continue with execution of its business plan and to take advantage of improving business conditions while meeting a bank requirement for a $5 million increase in reserves. In connection with this transaction, the company sold 15.8 million shares of common stock to a group of investors at a price of 90 cents per share. for an aggregate cash purchase price of approximately $14.2 million. The Wall Street Journal reports that Skadden, Arps, Slate, Megar, and Flom have been advising the company on its recent restructuring efforts alongside investment bank Rothschild Incorporated. The company's balance sheet at March 31, 2011 showed $333.9 million in total assets, $283.1 million in total liabilities, and $50.8 million in total stockholders' equity. Los Angeles, California-based American Apparel is virtually integrated manufacturer, distributor, and retailer of brand fashion basic apparel. Horizon Lines Incorporated said the company and the holders of the majority of its 4.25% convertible senior notes have entered into an agreement for transaction that will refinance the company's entire capital structure. The agreement with the note holders contemplates a complete refinancing in conjunction with a new asset-based revolving loan facility of up to $125 million, which is under negotiation with a lending financial institution. The agreement provides that the RSA will terminate automatically in the event cases under the bankruptcy code are commenced by or against the company in any jurisdiction and solely in the event of an involuntary filing against the company. Such involuntary cases is not dismissed within 15 days of filing. In the event that the bankruptcy filing is commenced or against the company waives any requirement under Section 362 of the Bankruptcy Code to lift the automatic stay thereunder in connection with the giving of any notice of termination of the RSA. The company's current debt structure consists of $225 million senior secured revolving credit facility and a $125 million secured term loan and a $330 million of unsecured 4.25% convertible senior notes. The capitalization will eliminate the refinancing risk related to the maturity of the existing convertible notes and the existing bank debt in 2012. And will provide liquidity to fund continued operations through the senior secured notes and a new ABL facility. At the same time, the capitalization provides for the immediate deleveraging of the balance sheet by $50 million through a debt for equity exchange and provides the potential for additional deleveraging through an early conversion of new convertible secured notes to be issued in the exchange offer. During and after the recapitalization process, the company intends to conduct business as usual throughout its trade lanes, focused on continuing customer service excellence and operational efficiencies. Consummation of the refinancing is expected to occur in August following finalization of documentation and completion of the exchange offer for the company's existing 4.25% convertible senior notes, which by law requires 20 business days to execute. Horizon Lines, based in Charlotte, North Carolina, through its wholly owned indirect operating subsidiary, Horizon Lines LLC, currently operates 11 of its 15 Jones Act qualified U.S. flag container ships in Jones Act liner services between the continental United States and either Alaska, Hawaii, or Puerto Rico, and 5 U.S. flag container ships between the Far East, U.S., West Coast, and Guam. Horizontal Lines reported a net loss of $57.9 million on $1.16 billion of operating revenue for the fiscal year ended December 26, 2010, compared with a net loss of $31.27 million on $1.12 billion of operating revenue for the fiscal year ended December 20, 2009. The company's balance sheet at March 27, 2011 showed $804 million in total assets, $797.3 million in total liabilities, and stockholders' equity at $6.66 million. As reported in the TSR on March 30, 2011, Ernest Young and LLP in Charlotte, North Carolina, expressed substantial doubt about Horizon Lines' ability to continue as a going concern following the company's 2011 results. According to Ernst & Young, there is uncertainty that Horizon Lines Incorporated will remain in compliance with certain debt covenants throughout 2011 and will be able to cure the acceleration clause contained in the convertible notes. In addition to the challenges companies mentioned in Mr. Fernandez's report, the troubled company reporter provides ongoing reports about more than 3,000 companies experiencing financial distress or restructuring their balance sheet in a judicial proceeding. Stay tuned to learn more about obtaining a free trial subscription to the TSR at no cost and no obligation. Next, we'll quickly review major pending disputes in two large Chapter 11 cases that troubled company reporters, editors, monitor day by day. Ivy Magdanero identified four major disputes in the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy. The disputes involve liquidation by the trustee for Lehman Brokerage Unit against Barclays PLC and Citigroup, and the company's own lawsuits against J.P. Morgan Chase and Nomura in an effort to recover billions of dollars for Lehman creditors. According to Ms. Magdalero, the New York bankruptcy judge James Peck ruled on June 6 that the trustee overseeing the Lehman Brothers brokerage unit liquidation is entitled to $4 billion in margin assets. The assets have been the subject of a long-running multi-billion dollar legal fight between Lehman and UK-based Barclays. The margin assets refer to the deposits Lehman posted to cover outstanding derivatives trade. The bankruptcy judge has ruled in favor of Lehman's trustee on those margin assets. The June 6th bench ruling means Barclays will have to return $2 billion in margin collateral to the Lehman trustee, James Giddens. The other $2 billion in margin assets is held by a third party or the trustee, according to Barclays. Barclays bought Lehman's North American broker businesses in September 2008, just a few days after Lehman filed for bankruptcy in New York. It was disputed whether the margin assets were mistakenly handed over to Barclays in relation to the broker unit sale deal in 2008. Judge Peck entered in first major ruling on the Lehman-Barclays dispute back in February. The bankruptcy judge held, under the February 22nd order, that Lehman's hurried to the 2008 sale of its broker unit to Barclays at the height of the financial crisis was unfair and ruled that Barclays should return any cash it received from the sale. Judge Peck, however, did not rule on how the disputed assets related to the Lehman's sale were to be divided. After the February ruling, Barclays argued that it should be able to use Lehman-related derivatives losses it had incurred to offset some of the margin collateral it had to return. Under the June 6 ruling, Judge Peck rejected Barclays' argument and also said Barclays would have to pay a 5% interest, an amount lower than the 9% interest Lehman sought in court papers. Judge Peck previously held that Barclays was entitled to roughly $1.1 billion in clearance box assets, a conclusion that Lehman did not dispute. Since Barclays is entitled to $1.1 billion in clearance box assets, the bank net cost for the June 6 margin asset ruling will be near $1 billion. Barclays disclosed on June 7th that it had made a provision for almost all of the net $1 billion it had been told to pay the Lehman trustee, but said it will appeal against certain aspects of the June 6th court ruling on the margin assets. No money or assets will be moved while the appeal process takes place. The appeal may potentially extend the lawsuit by 6 months or more. Barclays also said it will ask Judge Peck to dismiss Lehman's claims for $500 million in unpaid bonuses. In late April, Lehman told the bankruptcy judge that Barclays failed to pay bonuses to the UK bank agreed to when it bought the Lehman broker unit. Barclays asserted it has paid all promised bonuses. J.P. Morgan and Chase & Company asked Judge Peck at a May 10th hearing to dismiss Lehman Brothers' claim, demanding that it hand over $8.6 billion in cash taken as a collateral in weeks before Lehman filed for bankruptcy. J.P. Morgan was Lehman's main clearing bank in the days leading to the bankruptcy filing. The dispute has been the subject of lawsuits between Lehman and J.P. Morgan. Lehman filed its lawsuit in May 2010, and J.P. Morgan filed its countersuit in December 2010. The Lehman lawsuit was filed after an examiner appointed to investigate Lehman's bankruptcy found colorable claims against J.P. Morgan in connection with its demands for collateral, which had direct impact on Lehman's liquidity pool. At the May 10th hearing, lawyers for J.P. Morgan denied allegations that the bank had engaged in misconduct and portrayed the lawsuit brought by Lehman's and its unsecured creditors as undeserved punishment for the bank's good deeds. J.P. Morgan counsel reminded the court that J.P. Morgan helped to mitigate the 2008 financial crisis by continuing to provide financial services to Lehman even after the unit filed for bankruptcy. J.P. Morgan also accused Lehman of defrauding it into lending $70 billion in the days leading to the bankruptcy. In a court filing on June 3rd, J.P. Morgan said Lehman knowingly participated in deceiving J.P. Morgan into making advances that it couldn't rely in order to complete the broker unit sale deal with Barclays. J.P. Morgan said Lehman secretly granted Barclays the right to cherry-pick what it wanted from the collateral securing the loan, leaving J.P. Morgan with toxic, worthless securities. J.P. Morgan said that more than $25 billion of loans it extended remains unpaid. Lehman Brothers and affiliates of Tokyo-based Nomura Holdings have decided to put their billion-dollar dispute on hold indefinitely. In April 2010, Lehman sued Nomura in the New York Bankruptcy Court for filing claims against egregious inflation, resulting from calculations that were commercially unreasonable. The suit was in response to a 6 claims by Nomura subsidiaries seeking $1 billion under swap agreements terminated as a consequence of Lehman's bankruptcy. The bankruptcy judge consolidated the various disputes and established a schedule for discovery and examinations under oath. However, Nomura and Lehman filed papers to the court in mid-May asking the judge to freeze the suit. Nomura and Lehman also agreed to each party as the ability to cancel the stay and to reinstitute the litigation. In late May, Citigroup Incorporated asked the New York Bankruptcy Court to dismiss a $1.3 billion lawsuit filed against its banking unit by the Lehman Brothers broker unit trustee. Citi filed its motion to dismiss on May 26th. Citi said the suit is without merit and should be settled in arbitration proceeding not overseen by the bankruptcy court. Under the lawsuit, James Gideon, the trustee winding down the remaining assets of the Lehman broker unit, is seeking the return of a $1 billion deposit made to Citi the day the Lehman parent company filed its bankruptcy in 2008, plus $300 million in other Lehman funds. In a May 26 filing, Citi foreign affiliates explained it was under no obligation to settle foreign exchange trades for Lehman in September of 2008, but it did anyway under the condition that Lehman deposits $1 billion in cash with Citibank. Citi said that as it continued to extend billions of dollars of credit to Lehman, it ended up losing about $1.26 billion. Lehman could not turn its back on the bargain and claw back the deposit 2 years later after it has received the full benefit of the essential bank services, Citi asserted in court filings. The plan approval process in Tribune's case remains ongoing before Delaware Judge Kevin Carey, who was set to hear closing arguments on the confirmation hearing June 14th. With that, the resolution of the disputed $13 billion leveraged buyout of the company in 2007 is also pending. However, in recent related developments, Deutsche Bank AG and retirees sued former shareholders of Tribune over claims that Tribune's $8.5 billion LBO was fraudulent transfer that pushed the publishing company into bankruptcy. The suit filed on June 3rd was brought by Deutsche Bank against dozens of shareholders, brokers, and other parties in 11 states on behalf of Tribune's pre-buyout note holders. Those creditors are owed at least $2.5 billion that can't be repaid in full because of the 2007 deal, Deutsche Bank said in court filings. Most of the retirees that sued were employed by Times Mirror Company, the former owner of a Los Angeles Times, before it merged with Tribune in 2000. The Tribune bankruptcy is still before the Delaware Bankruptcy Court. Though the bankruptcy judge gave permission to Deutsche Bank to file the suits, he immediately stayed all of them. The recently filed state suits are part of a strategy devised by Aurelius Capital Management LP, which owns Tribune notes issued before the buyout. Aurelius proposed a reorganization plan that would use lawsuits against shareholders, lenders that funded the buyout, and others to collect what pre-buyout creditors are owed. Tribune Company proposed a competing plan sponsored by J.P. Morgan Chase and two hedge funds, Angelo Gordon and Oak Tree Capital Management. Their plan also relies on lawsuits, while setting most claims against the buyout lender, including J.P. Morgan. Tribune is the second largest newspaper publisher in the U.S. It filed for bankruptcy in December 2008. The Troubled Company Reporter provides detailed reporting about every Chapter 11 filing nationwide. Stay tuned to learn more about obtaining a trial subscription to the TSR at no cost or obligation. Julianne Lopez reports about five Chapter 11 debtors whose emergence from Chapter 11 has been delayed. Tribune Company, W.R. Grayson Company, Lehman Brothers, Washington Mutual, and Quigley. In Tribune, Judge Kevin Carey approved in May procedures allowing holders of senior loan claims and senior guarantee claims to change their votes on the second amended joint plan of reorganization proposed by Tribune Company and its debtor affiliates, the Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors, Oak Tree Capital Management, LP, Angelo Gordon and Company LP, and J.P. Morgan Chase Bank. Holders of the senior loan claims and senior guarantee claims were given until January 10th to return their supplemental ballots to the debtor's voting agent. The court also approved the procedure allowing certain holders of claims to make elections to 1. Receive new treatment of those claims, 2. Make additional elections concerning the scope of the previously granted releases under the debtor's plan, 3. Reconsider and, if they wish, opt out of the deemed transfer of so-called disclaimed state law avoidance claims to the creditor's trust under the debtor's plan. The record holders of senior note holder claims and other parent claims have until January 30th to return their election tabulation forms to the debtor voting agent. The debtor supplemental disclosure statement was also approved as a supplement to the previously approved disclosure statement explaining their plan. Meanwhile, Judge Carey held that Aurelius Capital, Deutsche Bank Trust Company, Law Debenture Trust Company of New York and Wilmington Trust Company are not required to resolicit the votes of any classes of claims under their competing Third Amendment Joint Plan of Reorganization for Tribune. The bankruptcy judge found that with respect to all classes other than the senior lender and bridge lender classes, the amendments made to the noteholder plan as incorporated in the Third Amended Noteholder Plan are either not material or adverse to the interest of the applicable creditors. Judge Carey extended the deadline by which the two groups, Tribune Company et al., and the note holders led by Aurelius Capital, would submit their findings of fact and conclusions of law in connection with the competing Chapter 11 plans to June 3rd. The plan proponents were expected to file closing arguments with respect to the rival plans on June 14, 2011. According to W.R. Grace financial results for the first quarter ended May 31, 2011, the U.S. District Court for the District of Delaware will hold a hearing on June 28 for oral arguments on appeals to the order confirming Grace's bankruptcy exit plan. The appeals were filed by several parties from Judge Judith Fitzgerald's order issued January 31, confirming the company's joint plan for reorganization. The appellates include the Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors, a group of lenders under the Prepetition Bank Credit Facilities, Garlock Sealing Technologies, the State of Montana, Her Majesty the Queen in the Right of Canada, and the BNSF Railway Company. The timing of Grace's emergence from Chapter 11 will be depending on affirmation of the plan by the District Court and the satisfaction or waiver of the other conditions set forth in the plan, including the resolution of any further appeals. Grace said it is preparing to consummate the plan as quickly as practicable. Grace marked its 10th year in bankruptcy on April 2, 2011. Lehman Brothers has announced its intention to adjourn the June 28th hearing on its proposed disclosure statement and the May 27th deadline for filing objections. The company has not yet fixed new dates and would file additional notice with the court of the new hearing date and objection filing deadline. The ad hoc group of Lehman Brothers creditors and another group of creditors led by Goldman Sachs Banks USA have agreed with the adjournment of the hearing and the deadline. Lehman Brothers also asked Judge Peck to approve changes in the voting procedures in connection with securities issued or guaranteed by the company. Lehman made changes to the voting process to provide that the securities issued by the company, individual holders of those securities that filed the claims, will be responsible for completing and submitting their own ballots if there is no indenture trustee or other voting nominee. Lehman has said it is aiming for a confirmation hearing in November to approve one of the three competing plans filed in its Chapter 11 case. Washington Mutual rescheduled a June 6 hearing on its reorganization plan in order to negotiate a settlement with shareholders. Brian Rosen, Esquire, counsel to WaMu, told Delaware bankruptcy judge Mary F. Walrath that the company seeks to reach a final agreement with shareholders by June 17th. WaMu creditors have approved the outline of the statement that would end their fight with the shareholders who accused the creditors of using confidential information to trade in the company's debt. Mr. Rosen said the settlement hasn't yet been documented and signed. Judge Walrath has given shareholders permission to question hedge funds that hold WaMu's notes under oath and collect documents about their WaMu trades. Should the tentative deal among WaMu that the hedge funds and shareholders fall apart, WaMu would go ahead with his current reorganization plan on July 5th, Mr. Rosen said. That plan would give shareholders nothing. Under the settlement, shareholders would drop their investigation of the hedge funds in exchange for common equity in the new company and funding for a liquidation trust that would try to raise money through lawsuits. The trust would be funded initially with $5 million and later have access to as much as $25 million more, WaMu said. Judge Walwes said that if the settlement goes forward at the July 5th hearing, WaMu could either seek approval of a new disclosure statement for a new reorganization plan based on the deal or set a schedule for approving a new plan. A new disclosure statement may require a new round of voting by creditors before the court can decide whether to approve the plan. WaMu filed for bankruptcy on September 26, 2008, the day after its banking unit was taken over by regulators and sold to J.P. Morgan for $1.9 million. Pfizer Incorporated lost an appeal in the reorganization of its non-operating subsidiary Quigley Company when a federal judge ruled that the drug maker isn't entitled to protection from some asbestos claims under the umbrella of Quigley Chapter 11 case. The May 20th opinion by U.S. District Judge Richard Howell in New York dealt with only one Quigley product, Insulog, and only affects asbestos claims governed by Pennsylvania law or states with similar laws. Under the settlement reached while the appeal was pending, many asbestos claimants have already resolved their disputes with Quigley and Pfizer. The decision was limited to implications, said Edward Weiss Fellner, Esquire, at Brown Rudlick LLP in New York, who represents an ad hoc committee of three law firms representing asbestos claimants. Our clients have reached a settlement with Pfizer and and a goodly percentage of all asbestos lawyers had reached a settlement years ago that would preclude them from pursuing this theory. Under Section 524 of the Bankruptcy Code, third parties can sometimes piggyback a company in Chapter 11 and receive absolution from asbestos claims without being in bankruptcy. Judge Howell ruled that the provision doesn't apply to Pfizer regarding Insulag claims under Pennsylvania law. Pfizer's liability arose out of its sponsorship of a defective product, not its corporation affiliation, said Quigley. Judge Howell said, as a result, Judge Howell reversed the bankruptcy judge and ruled that the asbestos claimants have the right to bring suits directly against Pfizer. There was no power under bankruptcy law to use Quigley's bankruptcy to stop suits against Pfizer, Judge Howell said. An injunction against Pfizer suits was beyond the jurisdiction of the bankruptcy court, he said. Judge Howell didn't rule that Pfizer is liable on Quigley's asbestos claims. Pfizer has said it disagrees with the ruling and will seek a clarification from the district court. Asbestos claimants were appealing an injunction by the bankruptcy judge earlier in the case, stopping suits against Pfizer. Amid the appeal, the bankruptcy judge in April approved a so-called plan support agreement designed to end the Quigley case after more than 6 years. The settlement was reached with an ad hoc committee representing 40,000 asbestos claimants contending they were injured by Quigley products. Quigley had a June 7th hearing for approval of a disclosure statement explaining the settlement and treatment of asbestos claimants under the Chapter 11 plan. Pfizer has requested a short extension of the bankruptcy proceeding, according to the company's statement. The settlement headed off a hearing to have been held in April, where the ad hoc committee would have sought dismissal of the Quigley reorganization begun in September 2004. The motion to dismiss resulted from a ruling by bankruptcy judge in September refusing to confirm Quigley's prior reorganization plan. The judge determined that the prior plan was filed in bad faith and wasn't feasible. Quigley's new plan was designed to cure the defects the judge identified in September. Quigley filed under Chapter 11 to deal with 500,000 asbestos claims. Psych Marikon Castilian reports about four companies who issued or will issue shares of new common stock upon emergence pursuant to the plans of reorganization they filed in their Chapter 11 cases in June 2011. Satmex, Constar. Satellites Mexicanos S.A. de C.V. emerged from bankruptcy on May 26 after receiving confirmation of its prepackaged plan reorganization. As part of the plan, the issuance of $325 million in principal amount of new 9.5% senior secured notes due 2017 was also approved. The notes were issued as at par on May 5, 2011 by Satmex Escrow S.A. and DCV, a bankruptcy remote wholly owned subsidiary of Satmex. Satmex Escrow was to merge with and into Satmex upon emergence. The net proceedings from the offering of the notes will be used to repay Satmex's existing first priority senior secured notes due 2011, and along with the proceeds of a $96.25 million fully backstopped rights offering of equity securities to holders of Satmex's second priority senior secured notes due 2013. Fund the completion of Satmex's Satmex 8 satellite scheduled to be launched in 2012 to replace its Satmex 5 satellite, purchase 100% of the current equity in Satmex, and position Satmex to pursue future growth opportunities. Constar International Incorporated, which makes plastic containers for the food and beverage industry, emerged from Chapter 11 protection on May 31st. Constar filed for bankruptcy in January after striking a deal with the majority of the holders of its $220 million in secured floating rate notes as to the key terms of the restructuring. The Chapter 11 plans calls for note holders, which have an allowed secured claim of $100 million, to share in $70 million in new notes due 2017, as well as new shares of convertible preferred stock. The noteholders will also see $121.4 million of their claims classified as unsecured, which bumps them down on the Bankruptcy Code's priority scale of creditors. They will join the ConStar's other unsecured creditors in sharing in 100% of the new common stock in the company. ConStar's existing equity will be canceled, and holders won't recover anything. Lenders behind ConStar's $55 million bankruptcy financing package, led by Black Diamond Commercial Finance, LLC, will receive some cash and may then choose to roll $15 million of their claims over into new term loans and new notes. General Electric Capital Corporation and other lenders who provide ConStar with $75 million in secured credit facility before its bankruptcy will be paid in full in cash on their $30.2 million in allowed claims. To fund ConStar's emergence from bankruptcy, Wells Fargo's Capital Finance, LLC, will lead a lender group that will provide the company with $60 million in exit loan. Summit Business Media emerged from bankruptcy following approval of its prearranged plan organization. Summit Business Media filed for Chapter 11 in January 2011 after a series of seven deals in 2006 and 2007 contributed to its debt pool. The reorganization plan, which had to go through the courts because only 83% of Summit's lenders approved it, proposed using Summit's bank balance and cash flow from current operations to meet working capital needs. The plan was officially approved by U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware on May 5th, wiping out $140 million of debt from Summit's balance sheet. Pursuant to the plan, holders of the allowed priority tax claim, which are unimpaired and unclassified under the plan, will be paid over a period of not later than 5 years after the petition date. Holders of the petition first lien secured claims owed $189 million will receive a new $110 million first priority first lien term loan, 89.4% of the new stock. The first lien lenders will recover 68 cents on the dollar. Holders of $55 million in pre-petition second lien debt will receive $1 million in cash and 5.56% of new stock. They will have a 4% recovery. Holders of the allowed general unsecured claim expect to total $6 million will receive $100,000 cash, resulting in a 2% recovery. Holders of the equity interest in Summit will not receive anything, and their interest will be canceled. Equity interest in other debtor affiliates will be reinstated. Harry and David Holdings Incorporated, a multi-channel specialty retailer and producer of branded premium gift quality fruit and gourmet fruit products and gifts marketed under Harry and David, Wolferman's, and Cushman's brands, filed a Chapter 11 plan to reorganize an accompanying disclosure statement on May 23rd. The plan includes an equity capital raise that will generate $55 million in equity financing upon the company's emergence from Chapter 11. The plan has the support of official committee of unsecured creditors and holders of approximately 81% of the company's public notes. The company expects to emerge from its financial restructuring with a significantly improved balance sheet and with substantially less debt. The proposed plan will allow the company to convert all of its approximately $200 million of outstanding public notes into equity of the reorganized company. A group of company's existing note holders have agreed to backstop the equity capital raise. The company will utilize proceeds from the equity capital raise to satisfy obligations rising from its $55 million post-petition term loan. Additionally, the company has a $100 million revolving loan commitment to refinance its operation after the company's exits Chapter 11, which will replace its current $100 million post-petition revolving loan facility. That ends the Baird Group Corporate Restructuring Review for May 2011, brought to you by the editors of the Troubled Company Reporter and Troubled Company Prospector. If you'd like to receive the Troubled Company Reporter for 30 days at no cost and with no strings attached, call Nina Novak at 240-629-3300 or visit bankrupt.com /free trial, and we'll add you to the distribution list. That number again, 240-629-3300, and that web address, bankrupt.com/free trial. Tune in to our next restructuring review on July 16th. Thank you for listening.